Okay, today is Wednesday, May 10th, or 15th day of the month of Iyar. This is the women's Mishnah Shir. We're in Masachas Chulin, 8th Perek. Okay, Rabotai. Last week, we learned the Gemara, which described the obligation of Netilat Yadayim. The reason why the Gemara discusses here all the parameters of Netilas Yadayim is because the previous Gemara had said that if you eat cheese and then meat, you have to rinse your mouth. You have to engage in kinuach and hadacha. Hadacha means to wash your hands, and kinuach is to clean out your mouth. So while the Gemara was already talking about that, it decided to talk about other forms of Netilat Yadayim as well. Mayim Rishonim, the waters that you use, the washing before you eat bread. Mayim Achroinim, the water which you wash with after the meal. And Mayim Emtsiim, in between courses. And we're going to see a fundamental machloikis between the Rabbeinu Tam and everybody else about what that Gemara actually means. But before we move on, I want to show you the Rambam and the Ravid's opinion based on everything we learned last week. So last week we focused on the halacha of Mayim Achroinim, which Tosfot elaborated upon. We read the entire Tosafot. And Tosafot told us that his opinion was that the primary reason for Mayim Achroinim is Melach Sdomit, coarse salt. Even though the Gemara in Masechet Brachot seem to learn it out from a pasuk. The pasuk read, it was last week's parsha, V'hit kadishtem v'hiyisem kedoshim ki kadosh ani Hashem Elokechem. So the Gemara darshaned, V'his kadishtem, that refers to mayim rishonim. V'hiyisem kedoshim, zu mayim achronim. Ani Hashem Elokechem, zu birchat hamazon. So Tosfos said, even though the Gemara seems to learn it out from a pasuk, I believe that the pasuk is to be treated like an asmachta. Asmachta means it's not a biblical legitimate source for the halacha. It's a rabbinic enactment, but the rabbis look for a pasuk to somehow connect their prohibition so that you might take it a little more seriously. But the prohibition itself has nothing to do with the pasuk. V'his kadishtem v'yisim kedoshim does not refer to washing at all. And the primary reason for mayim achroinim is the salt. Because since the Torah tells us that you're supposed to put salt on your bread, so as a result, when there are no salt shakers, when you put your fingers into this coarse salt and sprinkle it on the bread, then you rub your eye. The Gemara will say it explicitly, that you'll rub your eye, you'll become blind. So therefore, they mandated chovah to wash your hands. Tosfos said that since in his time already, people did not use mayim achroinim, they didn't. Why? Because nobody used coarse salt any longer. And this concern was no longer applicable. So Tosfos says that in his community, these are talking probably European, German, or French, Balei HaTosfos. Tosfos says that it was no longer a widespread practice. That's what Tosfos said. That's what we had seen last week. So today, if you take page 2 of last week's handout, which I distributed, page 2, we're going to see the Rambam and the Ravid. So the Rambam writes, Kol ha'ochel hapas shimivarchin oleh ha'hamotzi, anybody who eats bread upon which you recite hamotzi, tzorich netilat yadayim tchila v'sof. You have to wash your hands at the beginning of the meal and at the end of the meal. Afal pi shehi patchulin. Even though it's ordinary bread, no sanctity whatsoever. V'afal pi she'en yadav meluch lachot. Even though your hands are perfectly clean, they're not dirty. V'eino yodea lohem tum'ah. and you know for a fact that your hands have not touched anything that is a source of tumah. Nonetheless, lo yochal ad shiyitol shtei yadav. You shall not wash, you shall not eat rather, until you wash both hands. V'chein, kol davar shetibulo b'mashkin, any fruit or vegetable that is customarily eaten by dipping into some liquid, tzarech netilas yadayim tchila. It requires, as we pointed out last week, it requires netilat yadayim as well. Now, the reason why the Rambam emphasizes in line number one, kol ha'ochel pat shimivarchin aleh ha'hamotzi, is based on the fact that the Rambam is emphasizing that there are certain types of baked products that are made exactly from the same ingredients that bread are made. Bread is made of. What are the primary ingredients of bread? Flour and water. So you can have lots of things made out of flour and water, but that doesn't mean that you make hamotzi on it. In order for something to become hamotzi and to require netilat yadayim, it requires what's called in Aramaic turita dinahama, which in Hebrew means tsurat hapat. It has to be something which, if you expect bread to be served at the table, you would get bread. That item would appear there. So today, if you had a bagel, right? People serve bagels when they anticipate bread. If you have a roll or a piece of rye bread, that's fine. But a wrap, you will never find just a wrap if you expect bread at the table. Just plain wraps. So even though a wrap is made exactly the way bread is made, you do not make hamotzi lechem en haaretz on a wrap. You do not. So you might make a borei minei mezonot on a wrap. Here, right here. You might make a borei minei mezonot on a wrap, or you might make, depending what the wrap is, if it's a tuna wrap, you make a shahakol. If it's a vegetable wrap, you make borei pri adama. So that's what I do. But even though the wrap itself is made out of the exact same ingredient as a bagel, but it does not have tzurat hapat. A piece of pizza also is made out of flour and water, and all it has is some tomato sauce and some cheese on it, but you don't make hamotzi on a piece of pizza because of the fact that it does not have tzurat hapat. If you're expecting bread, nobody puts a piece of pizza down on the table. More than two pieces. That's for a different reason. If you eat anything that is made out of grain and you are koveya se'uda, you dedicate your meal on that. So Rav Moshe Feinstein rules it's more than two slices. So then you have to wash and make hamotzi on that. But if you eat less than what's called kviyat suda, then you only make a berei minei mezonot. You do not wash, and you say ala mechia at the end. So the Rambam is emphasizing that the halach of netilat yadayim is only for pot for which you make hamotzi, and that is grain with flour with water plus tzurat hapat, something that is identified as pot when you expect it. But if it's not, then you don't make hamotzi on it, and you do not require netilat yadayim.
What about mezonos rolls? Yeah,
there is no such thing.
You get that on the plate.
Don't, I know. Ignore it.
Yeah, what do you do with that?
You make hamotzi.
Really?
Yes, 100%. It's a figment of their imagination that there is such a thing called a mezonos roll. By the fact that it's called roll, it has... So just because it has some fruit juice in it doesn't reduce it from pas. The Rav always said there's no such thing as a mezonos roll. Very widespread.
On a bench, if it doesn't have tzurat hapat, do you bench?
No. If it does not have tzurat hapat, like if you eat pizza, you make ala mechia. Or a wrap. Depends what bracha you made. If you made a bar minim mezonot, you say ala mechia. Now if you said shahakol, you make a bar nefashos.
Eat pizza as lunch.
Correct.
And
but
wraps as much.
The halacha of kviya suda is not determined by your standards of eating. The halacha has determined it objectively. How much grain must be consumed in order to be kviya suda? It's not to say if you eat one piece of slice of pizza for lunch, that is not called kviya suda. It's not. If you eat a wrap, that's not called one wrap. That's not called kviya suda.
Practically speaking, what that quantity is?
You don't know. You don't, because the Gemara measures it in terms of the amount of flour that would constitute shalosh beitzim, three eggs. So you have to ask people who've measured this, to measure this out.
What about egg matzah?
What about egg matzah?
Same thing.
Egg matzah is egg matzah. Yes, 100%. Yes? According to the Rambam?
Yeah, like if Pesach starts Saturday night, that's what we eat on Shabbos.
Egg matzah. Yeah. That's right. Yeah, but according to Rambam, for example, you're not allowed to eat egg matzah on Erev Pesach, which comes out on Shabbos, because the Rambam says egg matzah is kosher for the Seder. Yes.
Wow.
You can use it to be Mekai in the midst of matzah, because the Rambam believes that eggs can't make it into matzah ashira, enriched bread. There are only seven liquids, and eggs is not one of them. That's the Rambam's unique shita. You can have shmura egg matzahs, and according to the Rambam, we don't pass them like the Rambam, but the Rambam says so. But because it's called bread on Pesach, you make hamotzi, and that. Thank you for saving that example. Do you know that Sfardim do not make hamotzi on matzah all year round? They do not. Because to them it's a cracker. What endows the matzah with the status of bread? When you're calling for bread, when would you get it? Matzah, only on Pesach. So on Pesach it has a halacha of pas for hamotzi. But on a Tuesday, if you expected bread at the table, is anybody going to serve shmur matzah today? Nobody's going to give matzah today. So therefore they make a mezonos on matzah all year round. Except for Pesach, when the halacha dictates that that's bread. Fine. So that's halacha number one of the Rambam. Then halacha number two. Kol hanotel yadav. Anytime there is an obligation of netilat yadayim, bein le'achila, whether you are dealing with washing before meal, bein l'kriyat shema, before you recite the Shema. The Rambam says, for davening and Shema, you have to wash your hands before every tefillah and before the time you are mekai in the midst of kriyat Shema. Mivarech b'tchila, asher kedushanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu al netilat yadayim. The Rambam says, any time that the rabbis have mandated that you wash your hands, and the Rambam in Hilchot Tefillah says that Taharat HaYadayim, hands clean, washed, is one of the five things that are Me'akev Tefillah. You cannot daven unless you wash your hands. And there are people who are careful about it. The Vilna Gaon followed the Rambam and made a bracha. We don't accept the Rambam's opinion that you make a bracha when you wash for davening. We don't paskin that way. We paskin against the Rambam. But the Rambam's shita is that any time you wash and there is an obligation to do so, you make al netilat yadayim. The Rambam continues now on page 3. Shizu mitzvat chachamim hi, because this is a mitzvah of the chachamim. Shenitztavinu batora lishmoa mehen, we are obligated from the Torah to listen to rabbinic legislation. Shene'emar al pi haTorah asher yarucha. This is in Parshat Shoftim in Devarim chapter 17. The Torah tells us, al pi hadvarim asher yarucha, lo tasur min hadavar yaminu smol. Just listen to what the rabbis say. Don't deviate either to the right or to the left at all. Since the rabbis, whatever they say is backed up by lo tasur, Therefore, you can say on a rabbinic commandment, "Asher kedishanu b'mitzvotav v'tzivanu," that HaKadosh Baruch Hu commanded us. Where did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell us to read the Megillah? He didn't. Where did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell us to wash our hands? He didn't. Where did HaKadosh Baruch Hu tell us to light Chanukiah? He didn't. So how could I make a bracha, Baruch Atah Hashem, and say, Vitzivanu, you commanded us? Because every rabbinic prohibition, every rabbinic mitzvah, is covered by the biblical commandment, Al Pi HaTorah Asher Yerucha. Follow the law which they tell you. And you're not supposed to deviate to the right or to the left. And the Drash, which Rashi in the Chumash quotes, Afilu, the Rabbanan tell you, Al Yamin Shehu Smol. You know it's your right hand, but they tell you, no, it's your left hand, you listen to them. Just listen to the rabbis, never deviate. So therefore the Rambam says, if I say, and the Rambam did, as I just said in Hilchot Tefillah, that the Rambam mandates Netilat Yadayim before the recitation of Shema and Shemone Esrei, therefore before you, after you wash, you say Al Netilat Yadayim. According to the Rambam, you make the bracha before you wash, like everything else. It's another difference between Sephardic and Ashkenazic. We follow Tosafot, who says that since there is one time during the day where you cannot make the bracha before the action, because that's normally when a bracha is recited, you don't make the bracha of Al Achilas Matzah after you eat matzah. You don't make the bracha of Al Netilat Lulav after you take the lulav. But we wash our hands after we make the bracha, because there is one time during the day that you cannot make a bracha before you wash it. That's in the morning. So since there is one time that you have to wash first, the Tosfos says, let's not get everybody confused. Let's standardize the practice. Whenever you have to go wash, you make the bracha after you wash. That's Tosfos' opinion. The Rambam doesn't believe that. The Rambam says, yeah, in the morning, that's true. You have to make the bracha afterwards. But all other times during the day, you make the bracha before you wash Al Netilat Yadayim. Same thing as by immersing in the mikveh. We always immerse in the mikveh and then make the bracha. Why? Because there's one time when someone immerses, can't make the bracha until they immerse. A convert. Convert is not Jewish, so can't say Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu Melech Olam until he or she converts. So in order to maintain standardization of practice, you make the bracha afterwards. The Rambam disagrees, and he says, yes, by a convert, he'll make the bracha afterwards. Every other man or woman who have to go to the mikveh should make the bracha before they immerse, like every other mitzvah. So this is what the Rambam says, so you make a bracha. However, he tells us, as Tosfot did, Umayim achronim ein mevarchin aleihem. However, on Mayim Achronim, there is no bracha associated with it. She'enan ela mipnei hasakana. There is no mitzvah to wash your hands after the meal. It doesn't fulfill any mitzvah. It's only done to protect your eyes. Since it's only done to protect your eyes, it's not a mitzvah per se, and it doesn't fall under the category of Asher Kedishanu B'mitzvotav V'tzivanu. But because of the sakana, Lefika Chayav Adam Lehiza Bahen Yoter. You have to be more careful about Mayim Achronim than any other washing, as we pointed out last week. Soldiers are exempt from Mayim Rishonim before the meal, but they are not exempt from Mayim Achronim, based on the fact that you must necessarily wash in order to protect your eyes. So the Rambam clearly sides with Tosfos, that the purpose of Mayim Achronim is because of the potential danger. He didn't say Melach Sedomit, but that's what the Gemara actually says. Now right to the left of it, you find the Ravid. The Ravid disagrees, and he takes that which Tosfos introduced as a possibility, and he said that is the real reason why you wash Mayim Achronim. Not this business with salt and rubbing your eyes. Let's read the Ravid. Omar Umayim achroinim ein mevarchan aleim she'enon ele b'nei ha-sakana. Omar Avraham, his name was Rabbi Avraham ben David. Shomati b'shimushei ha-geonim ha-kadmonim. I heard from the early geonim shekatvu al hamayim ho'acharonim biracha al rechitzas yodayim. I heard that the early geonim had a bracha for mayim achronim, not al netilat yodayim, but al rechitzas yodayim. That's what I heard. The chaye roshi, and I swear by my life, dvarim nechonim heim, they are 100% correct. These early gaonim are 100% correct. Why? Shaharei chachamim darshu etchteim mipasuk echad. Because the rabbis derived both the washing before the meal and the washing after the meal from the exact same pasuk. What pasuk? Vehit kadishtem vehiyitem kedoshim. And Fihit Kadishtem referred, as Tosvot said last week. So Tosvot really pushed aside this Gemara and said that what is that Gemara? An Asmachta. Don't take it seriously. The Ravid says it's not a joke. It's not an Asmachta. This is a serious derivation. In which case, the source of Mayim Achroinim is exactly the same source as Mayim Rishonim. It has nothing to do with Sakana. It's to keep a state of taharat hayadayim before and after the meal. And hence, it is appropriate to recite a bracha, because after all, it's a mitzvah that emerges from the Torah, says the Ravid. V'chein amru, so too the Gemara said, yodayim mizuhamot, greasy hands, psulot libracha, are disqualified for reciting Birchat HaMazon. Tosfos mentioned it and just pushed it aside. Yeah, that's all. But the Ravid takes it seriously. Ube'emet, ube'birur, truthfully and with certainty, im ochal davar shiyesh bo zuhama, sarich levarech al rechit satan. If there's any grime or grease on anything you eat, before you recite a bracha achrayna, you must wash your hands. However, im ochal divarim yeveshim, if you ate something that's dry, not oily, something that's very dry, and your hands are not going to get greasy if you eat it, ein tunot beracha, she'ena ela mishum refuah. Because then washing your hands after you eat anything is only for cleanliness purposes. If you're going to leave any food on your hands and you have a little opening, who knows, you get a little cut, you get infections. But if under normal circumstances, you don't wash if your hands are not grimy or greasy. But if your hands have zuhama on it, you are not permitted to recite Birchat HaMazon. And the Ravid recommends that you make a bracha of al rechitzat yodayim. I'm washing your hands just as, and in fact those gonim might have said rechitzat yodayim for the bracha Rishona as well. Our text is actually a little unusual. Because what does nitila mean?
To take.
No tail. Because it means that you're taking a cup, a vessel, to wash your hands. We'll talk about that in the Gemara we're going to read. So that's why it's nitilat yadayim. It's a little funny thing. The bracha which they suggested, rechitzat yadayim, is more accurate. It's not, because the ikar is not that you took a utensil, that's just the mechanism by which you wash. But the mitzvah is to wash your hands. So maybe they use that all the time.
You have to be consistent, because on the one hand he's saying it's coming from one pasuk, and they're the same.
Right.
And on the other hand, the reason for the first Netilat Yadayim is to get rid of, because our hands, to get rid of Tuma, right? Even though you're really not getting rid
of. No, that's not what he says.
No, not. Oh, that's not what
the that's not. That was what the Rambam said, following the way of Tosfos.
So he's saying it to prepare yourself for the bracha the same way that you prepare.
Correct. You're about to eat a meal, And in order to make sure that your meals become a holy meal, you wash your hands before. Exact, for the same purpose. That's correct.
The same, we don't say Russell, we don't say Natila when we're doing the order of the Seder.
That is correct. That's a good point. Yes. And we call it Urchatz the first time. Right? That is correct. Yes. Yes. But the tradition that we have is Al Netilat Yadayim. The Gemara actually quotes the text. But I don't know why they decided. So here clearly the Ravid, if the Ravid were around today and you would ask him, should I be washing Mayim Achrayinim? What would he say today?
Yes.
Of course.
Yeah.
It's just as obligatory as Mayim Rishayinim. That's correct.
And not just washing, but making a bracha too.
And make a bracha. 100%.
Everyone I know who does Mayim Achrayinim does not say a bracha.
Because we don't follow the Ravid.
Right, but people still do Mayim Achrayinim.
There are people who still do Mayim Achrayinim. Yes, many people. Yes. Yes. But nobody, because we follow the Rambam, that you're supposed to wash Mayim Achrayinim, but there is no bracha because it was originally instituted, Mipnei HaSakana, not for a mitzvah. Right. Right. Yeah.
So what's the rationale for you make the writer says you're required to say a bracha if your hands are dirty, for my acronym, but not if you ate something dry and your hands were not dirty. If the reason for the bracha is not having to do with cleanliness, but having to do with being a mitzvah that's commanded in the pasuk, so why do you...
That's a very good question. I don't have a good answer for that. Because the Ravid brings both things. He brings the pasuk, but that pasuk is only for bread, only for the meal. Because the last phrase in the pasuk, Ki Kadosh Ani Hashem Elokechem, is what drash? What do they learn at? That's Birchat HaMazon. So when you're eating bread, then you have to wash afterwards at all times to qualify you to say Birchat HaMazon. You wash before and after. But if you're eating fruit, you don't have to say Birchat HaMazon. So what's the only reason why you would be washing your hands after eating fruit?
You're still saying bracha.
Correct. But it's not a significant bracha achrayna. Birchat HaMazon is a real significant bracha achrayna. Bari Nefashos is not. So for that, you don't have to be such a holy person. But for Birchat HaMazon, I want you to be a holy person. That's the Ravid Shita.
Even if you're not greasy, you're still.
Well, we don't wash our hands before every single bracha.
Okay, there are some people who do.
Yeah.
That any time I've seen people before they took lulav and esrog, they wash their hands before, because you're going to recite a bracha, so you want to create a state of sanctity before I mention HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name in a bracha. I've seen a lot of people do that. She washes hands? Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Okay. Let's continue with the Rambam. There is one other type of Netilat Yadayim, which we read about and we will elaborate in the Gemara today. Netilat Yadayim Bein Tavshil Litavshil Rishut. Washing your hands between one course and the next course is a rishus. Ratza no tail, ratza eino no tail. You want to wash? Wash. You don't want to wash? Don't wash. Now here, what do you think this, what do you think, I'm going to ask you, what do you think the word tavshil means? Some, could anything cooked? Good. Does this necessarily mean that one was cheese and one was meat?
No.
It
sounds like it was all one meal.
It is all one meal.
It's been very prolonged. The meals must have been very...
It means between two courses. You can eat quickly, but you have. But between two courses, you have to wash. You don't have to wash. It's rishus. Upeirot shel chulin einan tzricha netilat yadayim lo betchila velo besof. If you eat ordinary fruit, not fruit of truma, or masasheni, or something like that, it doesn't require a bracha. the chol hanotel yadav lepeirot hareza migase haruach. Anybody who washes his hands because he wants to be a super frummy, he's a haughty show off. So, and the Rambam doesn't like haughty show offs. Yeah. Good. Now, I'm going to distribute the next sheet, and we're going to see two interpretations of this idea of tavsha l'tavsha. Here's the new sheet for today. Page one is the same one that you had in your other sheet, but we're going to see page two also. So if you go to the bottom of side number one, I bracketed where the Gemara continues. Actually, I'll do it a little differently. Go to page number two
of the new sheet.
The second side of it. Because I just mentioned this in the Rambam, we'll do this first and go back to that. It's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. Eight lines from the top. Emtzaim Rishus. Emtzaim Rishus. Everybody have the place? 8 lines from the top? The Brisa had said that washing your hands in between courses is an option. We just read that in the Rambam. Amar Rav Nachman, says Rav Nachman, Lo shanu ela bein tavshil l'tavshil. When do we say that washing the hands between courses is optional? Is when you're eating two cooked items, either two dairy cooked items or two meat cooked items. Then you don't have to wash your hands in between courses. Aval ben tavshil ligvina chova. But if you're eating a cooked dish of meat and a cooked dish of what? Cheese. And all the commentaries will say that the cheese was eaten first, because if you eat the meat first, washing your hands is not going to allow you. You're going to have to wait, obviously. Exactly. So he ate a cooked dish of cheese, and then followed that at the same meal, the next course is a cooked cheese, a dish of meat. Then that's no longer optional. You must wash your hands under those circumstances. Because whenever you go from meat, from cheese to meat, it requires netilat yadayim. Yes?
What difference does it make if it's cooked or not?
Shouldn't raw cheese? Yeah, it doesn't. And what's going to make a difference is the way the Rabbeinu Tam will explain. It says tavshil for a very good reason. We'll see.
When you say netilat yadayim, you don't mean just washing up your hands to get the food off. You mean actual netilat yadayim with the utensil.
Yes, that's correct. Its purpose is to get the cheese off it. But you have to do a regular netilat yadayim.
Why is that?
Because the rabbi said so.
Because the reason you're saying is to get the cheese off.
Correct, but that's, yes. So now, take a look at Tosafot on the top of the page. Lo shanu ela bein tavshil l'tavshil. Omer Rabbeinu Shmuel. So Rabbeinu Shmuel says, Demairi, it's talking about Bishnehem shel basar o shnehem shel givina. That the two courses were either both meat or both cheese. Avo bein tavshil shel basar Ligvina shalifanav, but if you're eating a cooked item with meat and the cheese before that, chova, that's what I just told you. Avo ligvina shalachrav, but if you eat meat first and then cheese kreplach afterwards, lo ka'amar, he doesn't say you should wash your hands. Da filu binetilas yadayim asur. le'echol ad se'uda acheret, until the next meal. That's what we learned last week. The basic core is from me'suda le'suda, from one meal to the next meal. Kida'ar ma'le'el, as the Gemara said previously, ochal basar asur le'echol gvina. Anybody who eats meat cannot eat cheese in the same meal. He's got to wait until the next meal. So the way I explained the Gemara was exactly like the Rabbeinu Shmuel. Ve'ein nire l'Rabbeinu Tam. This does not appeal, this way of learning the Gemara does not appeal to the Rabbeinu Tam. The Bein Tavshil L'Gvina Mashma Tavshil Tchila. When the Gemara says that you should wash your hands between Tavshil and Gvina, it looks like, which one are you eating first?
The
Tavshil. The which is the Tavshil of meat. And then you're going to have cheese. Not like the Rabbeinu Shmuel said, the reverse. The way I translated for you. The Gemara doesn't say that. The Gemara knew how to say, Ben Gvina le Tavshil. But it didn't say that. It said, Ben Tavshil le Gvina. Kid'am ala'el. The Ben Tavshil le Gvina, Mashma Tavshil Tchila, Kid'am ala'el. Kamo Yesheh Ben Basa le Gvina. How much should you wait between meat and cheese? Velo klum. You don't have to wait at all. Uparech, and the Gemara asked, V'amar avchista ochal basar e'asu lechal gvina, elekama yisheh ben gvina lebasar. What? When don't you have to wait? When you eat the cheese first. But if it says tavshil and then gvina, what do you have to assume was eaten first? The meat. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. The Gemara says, Tavshil, and then you follow it with Gvina. All you have to do is wash your hands. So you're asking, how could that be? So the Rabbeinu Tam, I'm going to explain it to you outside, and then read it inside. The Rabbeinu Tam says, we all made a mistake in translating the word Tavshil. Tavshil means something that was cooked either in a fleshy pot or had a little meat in it, but the meat was insignificant. It's no longer recognizable. You can't see the meat after you cooked it. And it was done to just give what? Flavor of the product, of this par product to this kugel. You wanted a meaty taste. So you put in a little drop of meat, or you cooked it in a fleshy pot. That's called tavshil shel basar. And even though there was a drop of meat in it, it's not, doesn't make you fleshy.
Is that true?
No. This is Rabbeinu Tam's opinion. Tosis himself is going to disagree with the Rabbeinu Tam. But the Rabbeinu Tam says that's what the word tavshil means. And tavshil is not halachically called meat. In order to become fleshik and not eat cheese, you have to eat meat, basar be'en, a piece of meat that you can see, touch, and feel. But if you can't see if the meat has been absorbed completely in the amongst the rest of the ingredients, that's called tavshil shel basar. What?
Soup.
Yes, same thing.
Like a meat
with, yes, that would be perfect illustration. You put in a piece of meat, the meat dissolves, and now it has this meaty flavor. That's not fleshik. That is tavshil shel basar. Says the Rabbeinu Tam, you are allowed to eat cheese right after you had that fleshik soup, which you made with a piece of meat, but you can't see the meat any longer. It's somehow dissolved in the soup. You are allowed to eat cheese right away. Except what do you have to do? You have to wash your hands. Yes.
There was
no way to
get meat between your teeth. If you had this meat,
good. Good. That's a very good explanation. If you don't see the meat, there cannot be basar al dena ben shineihem. Correct.
Is that a known thing in the Torah, that expression hachshil?
Yes, it's
so that's the one thing all the way through.
No, but it's the question is how you interpret
it. No, I know, but it's a known.
Yes.
Is Tafshil interpreted in other places to mean this?
No.
Oh.
Yes, according to Rabbeinu Tam, always.
Oh, really? So it's not just to be backed into it here.
Tafshil Shel Basar means, according to Rabbeinu Tam, whenever you see it in the Gemara, it means something that was cooked either in a fleshic pot or it had some meat in it, but it's completely dissolved. Tavshil shel gvina is where you don't see the cheese at all. It's in there. It is mixed up with the other ingredients. You don't see the cheese. You don't feel the cheese. That's called tavshil shel gvina.
But he never says you should eat those together at the same time.
No, but one right after the other.
Yeah.
One right after the other.
A 6-hour meal. He never wanted to eat.
That's what the Rabbeinu Tam says. And the only obligation to wait is if you're eating basar be'ein, where you see and touch the meat. That's the only time. Tosfos himself says, the Rabbeinu Tam might be correct, but the minhag ha'olam is not this way. The minhag ha'olam is to treat what the Rabbeinu Tam called tavshil shel basar as real meat, and you must wait 6 hours. You must wait 6 hours. If there was a drop of meat in it, and it somehow got absorbed and can no longer be identified, you treat it as if it's regular meat, and you wait 6 hours, washing your hands accomplishes absolutely nothing. That's our practice in accordance against the Rabbeinu Tam. Let's read it inside now. I'm continuing from the Va'od. The Rabbeinu Tam asks a question. Va'od, a second question. Bein tavshil l'tavshil b'shneim shel basar o shel gvina, lomo yesh lo litol klal. If you're eating at a meal and you have one fleshic course followed by another fleshic course, or one dairy course followed by another dairy course, the Gemara calls it rishus. Why is there any obligation to wash? For what? Why does the Gemara entertain discussion about what's called mayim emtziyim, waters in the middle of a meal? If they were both fleshic, why would I think I have to wash my hands in between the meals? If they were both dairy, why do I have to wash my hands between courses?
You have to say a bracha.
No, but everyone says that you don't say a bracha because there's no mitzvah. Rav Nachman said it's rishus. The Brisa said it was rishus. But why would the Gemara talk about it if that's what we're talking about? That it's two of the same. Therefore, umefaresh Rabbeinu Tam, the bein tavshil l'tavshil, hainu, what is that? Bein tavshil debasar l'tavshil shel givina. It's talking about a cooked meat product and a cooked cheese product. Dekevon de'ein habasar v'hagvina be'en, since you cannot see the meat or the cheese directly with your eye, v'leka elo ta'am, and there only is ta'am, taste. You can taste the meat. You can taste it. Lo hechmiru shiyehe choval litol yodayim benetayim. V'eino eno l'rishus. Then there is no obligation to wash your hands under these circumstances, because the ta'am cannot create the fact that you are now becoming fleshic by simply eating a piece of meat, a delicacy, a soup or a kugel that had some meat. You can't see it. You are not technically fleshic, says the Rabbeinu Tam. And it's only ta'am. Only the residue to taste. Now, in your experience, do we paskin like this, Rabbeinu Tam?
No.
We believe that ta'am ki'ikar, that the taste is exactly the same as what?
The essence.
As the essence. So according to the Rabbeinu Tam, listen carefully, if I cooked meat in a pot, then I took a pot, I took out the meat, I washed the pot thoroughly, and now I cook cheese within 5 minutes in that same pot. What would you do with it? What would you do with it? You would know. You don't have to call me for that. What would you do? You have to kosher it. Either you throw, if it depends what it's meant. But you have to kosher it. Can you eat the product? No. Absolutely not. It's basa b'chalav. How did it get to be basa b'chalav? There was no meat when you cooked the cheese in the product, in the pot. How did you get to be basa b'chalav? Because the residue tam that somehow lodged in the walls is purged with the subsequent application of heat. And the tam of the basar enters the cheese and it creates basa b'chalav. That's what we do. Unless, and now you'll understand this halacha, now, unless you waited 24 hours after you washed out the pot. Because then the tam, the Gemara believes that any time you have residue tam being purged after 24 hours, it's lifgam. Poge means it makes the product worse, not mishabeach. And no saying tam lifgam is mutar b'dieved. B'dieved, you'd be allowed to eat the cheese dish that you made after 24 hours. You have to kasher the pot anyhow, but the product could be eaten as long as you waited 24 hours. That's why that's always your first question. How long of a gap was it? Right, when was the last time you lose the pot? That's the critical question.
Many times, vision, and we go more by taste.
Yes. Yes.
By what you can see.
Correct. But it's hard to understand how the Rabbeinu Tam completely ignores Tam when the Gemara, when half of the rest of this perek is going to be talking about the Tam of Basar and then the Tam of Chalav, you know, that gets absorbed. It's, you know, half of our kitchen laws are based on the fact that we believe in absorption. Absorption, as long as it's cooked with heat, there's going to be absorption. But the Rabbeinu Tam says, for Tam, you don't have to worry about this. It doesn't make you fleshic. Therefore, the only thing which the Chachamim demanded that you do if you wanted to eat the cheese right after the Tam shall, Tavshil shall bus, is wash your hands. But you don't have to wait 5 seconds after eating this soup that was made with meat, as long as you don't see the meat. Don't see the meat. It's a very big leniency of the Rabbeinu Tam, no doubt. Very big leniency. What is that? Yeah, without heat, nothing is absorbed. Without heat, nothing can be purged. So if you take a fleshic pot and pour milk into it, nothing happens. Just wash it out. That's all. Somebody called me when there was a blackout a couple of years ago. They had ice cream in the freezer and it melted right onto their chickens.
Cold.
But I said it's cold. What's the problem? Just wash it off. And that's it.
Wash it off with cold water.
Wash it off with cold water.
Don't certain spices also confer, like if you make things with certain spices?
Yeah, that's
like an essence.
We'll get to that. We will get to that. That's only if you use a knife on it. Mm-hmm. A knife. A davar harif has the it's called duhka de sakina, the pressure that is generated in a sharp item like an onion has the capacity to extract the previous taste that is absorbed in the knife. So you couldn't use that knife if you're making an onion for a meat meal. You can't use a dairy spoon that has been used within the last 24 hours to cut the onion. Because the tam of that onion will be pulling out, the tam of the dairy will be pulled out into the onion, so you can't use that.
Other vegetables, it isn't an issue. It's just
the only sharp. That's correct. Davar harif, it's called. That's correct. So let's continue with the Rabbeinu Tam. Again, I'm reading it again. Umifaresh Rabbeinu Tam, about 10 lines from the bottom. ומפרש רגנם, דבין תבשיל לתבשיל של, בין תבשיל דבשר לתבשיל גבינה. כיוון דאין הבשר והגבינה באין, ולכו אלו טעם, since the meat can't be seen or touched, it's only residue taste, לא החמירו שיהי חובה ליטול ידיים בינתיים. They did not impose a חובה, ואינו אלו רשוס. אבל בין תבשיל דבשר לגבינה, but if you ate a cooked item and now you want to eat what? Real cheese. If you ate a cooked item with meat, a soup that had meat in it, but you can't see it, and now you want to eat real cheese, then it's chova. You have to wash your hands. You must wash your hands under those circumstances. If either of them are what?
A real
thing, you can see the cheese or the meat, then you must wash your hands. But if it's a tavshil shel basar and a tavshil shel gavina, then nitilat yadayim is only reshut. Only reshut. And we don't paskin like the Rabbeinu Tam. There is only one time where we accept the Rabbeinu Tam. It's a very famous psak of Rab Moshe. In fact, it happened apparently when he was by Rabbi Tendler for Sukkos, one Sukkos. A woman was making a cholent, and she had in her freezer a silver foil roll of kishka, which she was going to throw into the cholent, but she took the wrong roll. It was a roll of gefilte fish, which she threw into the cholent. So they came running to Rav Moshe and asked him, are you allowed to eat this fish and meat? Are you allowed to eat this cholent? So Rav Moshe said, you're allowed to. Why? Because he said it's bad enough that we accept the halakha that you're not supposed to eat meat and fish together, which is nothing but a superstition, but it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, and all of Am Yisrael observes it. But we're not going to be imposing ourselves, it's just ta'am. So since the gefilte fish was remaining inside the silver foil as it was cooking with the meat, there was no real gefilte fish in the cholent. It's only tam gefilte fish with it. Said Rav Moshe, we're not going to go that far, and there I'm going to accept the Rabbeinu Tam under those circumstances. What? I have no idea how it tasted. That's all. So that's where we rely on this Rabbeinu Tam, where the halacha is a stretch, and in fact, Sfardim, as you well know, do eat meat and fish together, but do not eat dairy and fish together. They do not eat dairy and fish. A Sephardic Jew will never have cream cheese and lox. Never eat cream cheese and lox. Why?
Because fish are, cheese isn't a creature, fish is a creature.
Mm-hmm. So
chicken also isn't the same category as meat, right? It's a different category, really.
No, we treat chicken.
No, we treat it the same.
Yeah, alpidin, there is a difference. Yes, as we saw already. We treat it as basar, even though technically, halakhically, it's not basar. Yes.
But this halakh talks about cheese after a soup with meat in it.
Correct.
How come there's no waiting?
Because the Rabbeinu Tam believes you didn't eat meat. You only had tam of meat. Just the flavor. But since you're eating real cheese, you're going to have to wash your hands.
So we don't hold that way.
We do not hold that way. We paskin that ta'am basar is like basar itself.
Chicken and fish actually don't produce milk, so it would make sense that neither of those would be such a big issue. Because they don't produce, they're not mammals. They
okay.
Milk.
Okay.
The whole idea of it was you're not supposed to cook. That's the basis of it. You're not supposed to cook.
No.
Cook a lamb and it.
But I'm not talking about cooking. I'm talking about just eating them together.
Yeah, but the basis is that, isn't it?
No, of not eating fish and meat together?
No, I'm talking about eating milk and meat together.
Yeah, that's the basis.
So a fish don't produce milk. And
right, okay. But here, you know what it says in Shulchan Aruch, if you know what the superstition is based on? That if you eat fish and meat together, you're going to die from diphtheria. Yeah, that's what it says. There's a superstition. The Jews have been very superstitious, and many superstitions have entered into the Shulchan Aruch.
Can't drink after fish, you know that.
Can't drink?
Drink water after fish.
What? No, you're supposed to drink.
That's what my mother always used to say.
Why not?
You're supposed to drink because it's not hot your mouth.
Because fish is not water, and that's supposed to help. My mother always said that.
Okay.
Also superstition.
Yes, right? Right, right, right. There are lots of superstitions that we practice. Lots of superstitions. It's that reason that a father and son or two brothers are not permitted to get aliyot one after the other. It's only a superstition that the Ayin Hara hovering over the Sefer Torah is going to attack two members of the same family at the same time. It's all superstition, but it's quoted in Shulchan Aruch, and we practice that. So the Jews are a very superstitious people. Very superstitious. No doubt. Okay. Good. Now, let's go back to... let's go back to page one for a second. Yeah, now we're going to fill in other blank halachas. We're not going to get to this tonight about what type of water can you use for Netilat Yadayim. Can you use boiling hot water? Does it have to be cold water? Lukewarm? Let's say the Gemara is going to talk about the type of water that you use for washing your hands. So, but for that, Gufa. Well, some I understand. We'll see what the Gemara says. Gufa, mayim rishonim va'achronim chova emtzaiim rishus. Do you have? I'm on the first wide line on the bottom at the bracket. Gufa, mayim rishonim va'achronim. You must wash mayim rishonim and achronim emtzaiim rishus. Rishonim notlin bein bikli bein al gabe karka achronim ein notlin ela bikli. You're allowed to wash your hands before the meal into a utensil. So you have a utensil in your hand, and the water will what? Go into the sink or any other utensil. Or you can spill the water on the ground if you're washing outside. Mayim achronim, you are never permitted to spill on the ground when you wash mayim achronim. It must be into a utensil. Right? That's it. Into a utensil.
Why isn't it bein bikli with a kli?
What?
Why is it into the bein bikli?
Because that's how you translate it here. It's assumed that you are washing with a utensil. So that, but that's not the hamitzvah. That's a bidyeved. You can do tvilas yadayim if there is no cup available. But if there is a cup, you have to use the cup. Now, what is the reason for this? What is the reason for this? That the reason is that the Ayin Hara associated with Mayim Achronim reacts negatively and starts to become more of a force when it comes in contact with the ground, because the Ayin Hara, that's how Rishonim explain it, many times the Ayin Haras are on the ground, hovering on the ground. You can't see them. So, but when you pour Mayim Achronim on it, it wakes them up and gets them really stir crazy. So you're never allowed to wash. No. No. But Yentilat Yadayim, Rishonim, has nothing to do with, there's no Ayin Hara associated with it. No Ayin Hara associated with it.
Why Mayim Achronim?
Only Mayim Achronim has Ayin Hara. I don't know why. I have no idea. I have no idea. Yeah. Oh, the Gemara believed in this all the time. What? Yes, why did people do that? because of the ayin hara that might be foaming in the mayim achroinim. That's correct. That's correct. Either you take it off the table, you cut. That's all based on this ayin hara stuff.
This isn't a Gemara.
Is this
a
oh yeah.
I mean about this particular thing.
Yes, it's not in this Gemara,
right.
But the Gemara, right?
Well, now you know.
The Amri law and others say, "Ein notlin al gabe karka." Others formulate it not that you must wash mayim achronim into a utensil, but they formulate it in the opposite way. You are never permitted to wash mayim achronim and put them where? On the ground. So the Gemara asks, "My benayu, what difference does it make if you formulate it must be into a utensil, or it's not permitted to be what? On the ground. It's the same halacha. What difference does it make?" Answers the Gemara. Ika benayu kinsa. If you had a pile of wood on the floor. So now, if you say that the halacha is it must be poured into a utensil, even if there is a pile of wood on the floor, you're not allowed to wash mayim achroinim on that pile of wood. But if you formulate it by saying you're not allowed to wash mayim achroinim on the floor, if there is something on the floor raised, like a pile of wood, then you're allowed to wash the mayim achroinim into the wood, because it's not going to come in contact with the floor. So whether you formulate it in the positive, you must wash into a utensil, or the negative, you are not allowed to wash it on the floor, the difference is if there is something on the floor that separates the floor from the water flow. If the halach is you must wash it in a utensil, so then you must wash it in a utensil. But if the halach is you're not allowed to wash it on the ground, this time you'd be allowed to wash it. Why? Because it's not going to come in contact with the ground. So this is some of the bizarre halachas which are based purely on ayin haras. Rashi says that. If you look at the Rashi, which is with the headline Kinsa, on the right hand side, about, and I'm going to start at the end. It's four lines from the bottom of the page of Rashi. Ulekaman mefaresh, later on the Gemara explains, Mishum de ruach ra'a shora alehen kishehen al gabe karka. These evil spirits somehow are attracted to my machroinim. I have no idea why.
Isn't that Kabbalistic?
Who knows what it is? But I can tell you that the Gemara describes a situation. Yes, with Ravashi. Right, exactly. Ravashi was carrying a barrel of wine, and he was walking quite a distance, and he put it down near a drain pipe. And one of the Shadim, the spirits, punctured a hole in it. And the Gemara says that Ravashi summoned the Shade to Beis Din to pay, so that he should get paid for this lost wine. And his argument was, I have a right to put down my, I was just taking a rest. And the Shade argued, you should know that's where Shadim hang out, near drain pipes, and you were crushing me when you put your barrel of wine there. Therefore, I had to get it out of there, so I punctured a hole.
Convicted, what is he paying?
What? The Gemara asked that question. How's he going to pay him?
Yeah.
And so the Gemara said that he had to pay X amount, but Shadim can't deal with either numbers.
Even
Sfardim believe in that.
Jesus.
Oh! Sfardim believe in that. Sfardim do not do anything. They never eat two eggs. Either one or three. They blow 101 sounds on Shwash Hashanah, not 100. Because Zugot attracts Shadim. Oh, also, it's an ayin hara to do things in even numbers. They still practice that today.
To whistle?
Not to whistle.
They don't light two candles on Shabbos.
Never two candles. Either three, or one, or five, or seven. Never an even number.
Wait,
Sephardic Jews. What?
Michal?
Michal grew up in a normal house.
I know.
I'll check. Maybe Ovi told her to light seven instead of six. I don't know. I don't remember. Light between five and six.
Yeah, between five and six. Yes, that's where the shade can come out.
Really?
Absolutely.
Yes, if you don't get up at 5, that's it. We're going to have to
wait a minute. Wow. Okay. Telecha Mishneh, that's a good question. But they don't normally do things in even numbers. It's called Zugos. And they're pretty makbid about it. Yeah? All right, we'll stop here. And just check. It's either next week or the week after. What?
What's next week?
Next week's NORPATH.